Welcome back to the Lucci Cast presented by Yeti, built for the wild. Visit yeti.com to check out gear that'll help you travel farther, camp longer, and live harder. No matter where the wild takes you, Yeti is ready to tackle your next adventure head on. All right, we're back. Lucci Cast, Lucci and the Truth, Hunter Goodwin. I love when you're in the mahogany studios, by the way.
Hey, give me the rich, plush wood.
Give me all the mahogany.
All about the mahogany.
So, Hunter, big game last week, big game this week. We're in it. We're in the final month of the season. Three games left. We'll talk big picture here in a minute. We'll talk Auburn here in a minute. About a 30-minute segment here, so let's dive right in. A&M 20, LSU 7. You want to just freestyle and go?
Tell me. Sure, we'll freestyle. I mean, initial reaction, I had some concern.
Not like the not that freestyle.
Easy beatbox. Beatbox Billy.
Dog didn't like that.
Beatbox Billy is not from the hood.
Let her rip.
From rich Whitesville, Sugarland. Softsville, Sugarland. So, going into the week, I was concerned. You know, the game spooked me, scared me. Didn't really realize how bad LSU was. I think, you know, the quarterback play for them was not great at all. And they're young up on the front in the offensive line. So I think we took advantage of that. They played us good, I thought, defensively, especially in the back end. But a pretty, you know, dominant win. Our defense, I thought, played exceptionally well. DeMarvin Leal played, I thought, all night, lights out, made play after play. Buddy Johnson had a big night. So, you know, it's a great win. It was kind of, I guess, a little bit anticlimactic after the 50-7 romping that they did to us last year. Even though we won, I really didn't feel like we even got close to getting even. But we won, you know, chalk it up to a win. I think it helps the series over time. And
yeah.
We're moving. We had a long slide there under the Sumlin era, but we picked up a couple of wins here 2 years ago and this year. So it's good.
I think you bring up a good point too. It's like, I think that's where a lot of the frustration was, because for fans and just kind of the media, I thought got out of hand. They're just kind of judging A&M on that one game, but it was like just A&M just kind of cruised along and they put this target on their back and their first game out, the offense looked shaky and Kellen didn't play well. And, you know, it was just sloppy. But two things I want to say. Number one, it reminded me of the way you guys won football games when you played here. Running game, you know, consistent running game, and then popped some long ones and won it with tremendous defense. And that was kind of, you know, it's interesting to see A&M beat a team like that. And then they go play a top five Florida team and they beat them with explosive offense and just kind of finding the stops on defense. So I've been impressed with kind of how they've been able to fluctuate. And some days it's just not all working, but they find a way to get it done. And they've done that a couple times this year in big moments. The second thing you brought up, beating that LSU team twice. And I think the frustration when you watch that game and you mentioned their offense, Hunter, you kind of go, if you could run that one back and play it again, you felt like you wanted to see A&M bring their A game to that matchup, because I do feel like there could have been some real payback exacted. But I guess I'll take the win right now because of what looms ahead, man. They took one step closer to doing the unthinkable.
Yeah, I agree with you. You had a chance to really – make it miserable, and you really didn't take advantage of it. You won, but I think we shot ourselves in the foot so much offensively, and it was just a
What'd you feel like was wrong?
You know, after the game, and kind of based upon what just the narrative I've heard throughout this week, was the offensive line didn't play that great because they did their record of no sacks got broken, giving up a sack, but when you watch, I did in preparation for tonight, watch the first half, and really there was pretty daggum good protection.
Yeah.
Ellen wasn't under duress all night. he just made, I mean, it kind of started with the very first throw. He had a throw that was about a 6 or 7 yard pass in the flat to Spiller. Yeah. He throws it high and way too hard. And then it just kind of carried on throughout the night. He had some passes to Hez down the middle that he overthrew. He had a completion in the first quarter to Anais that was wide open in the middle of the field, and he threw it behind him and made him stop. He just was off. And the other thing, you know, we have not played well against aggressive man coverage all year. Our receivers were just couldn't create separation. And we were really lucky, Billy, that there was several plays in the first half alone where there were some pretty big risks taken by Kellen that we got lucky and they didn't convert to turnovers, but they could have and probably should have.
Shocking that in that game they didn't have a turnover.
It was shocking.
Kind of did on the fourth down, but technically not a turnover.
This is a total assumption on my part because I have no internal knowledge, but it appears to me in that game especially that on certain play calls, it's like he has his mind made up in the huddle who he wants to go to. He had one late in the first quarter where he was programmed and dialed in to Weidemeyer over the middle of the field. Weidemeyer was completely covered, was really bracketed, but underneath he had a shallow cross that had a pretty good five, six foot.
Yeah, center. Yeah, I know the play.
And he never looked at him, and it was almost like and there wasn't a protection breakdown. He wasn't under duress. He had plenty of time. It was almost like, I know on this play I'm supposed to go to Weidemeyer, so I'm not gonna read through my progressions and find the open receiver. I'm gonna try to force the ball to where I think it's supposed to go. And it almost looked like, you know, once he got out of the rhythm early, Gene Chizik said it best. You won't win a lot of games with your senior quarterback playing that bad. Worst QBR, I think, of his career at A&M, where he actually played in the whole game. You know, both of the LSU quarterback freshmen had better completion percentage. He's got to play better as a senior quarterback, and hopefully he will.
Well, let me ask you
that
this.
Hurt us offensively.
And that probably doesn't get you a win this weekend at Auburn. I mean, look, I do think there's a world where the A&M defense can tighten the screws again. I mean, this is 2 weeks in a row of borderline excellence. And I know they haven't played the best offenses, but they did play a first-round pick at receiver, a really good tight end at LSU. And at South Carolina, the guy leads the SEC in rushing right now. Now, they've played more games, but he's the SEC's rushing leader, and they shut him completely down.
So, well, Billy, I'll say this. When you hold a team to 36 yards on 25 attempts, yeah, I don't care against Mary, sister, mother of the blind, especially an SEC opponent, that's a hell of a night against the run. I mean, period, end of story. That is excellence, and you're going to have a chance when you're off. I mean, this is why you have to have great defense to win big games. Your offense is going to be off. And I said it leading up to this game last week that long lengths of time tend to affect offenses much more severely than defense. And I think you saw that, a lot of timing, a lot of missed throws, a lot of missed reads. Our rhythm, our timing was off. The defense had a big night, and had they not played lights out, you know, even as a fan after about the first half, you pretty much knew that LSU was not going to do much offensively.
Yeah.
So, you can't discredit the defensive performance. That was a hell of a night.
We'll be right back to the podcast in a moment. But first, here's a message from our good friends at HEB.
Gear up for game day from the comfort of your home with HEB curbside and delivery. Save time, shop online, get all the deals. Use the new MyHEB mobile app, your game day MVP.
So where I was going with it is I'm not going to rule them out from doing that again. You know, Auburn's traditionally given A&M problems offensively. I love their receivers. Seth Williams, the big, big up high over the top guy. He beat A&M 2 years ago. He scored 3 touchdowns in 2 games against the Aggies. And then Schwartz, the speedster. But for Auburn, it all stems from their running game. Bo Nix is bad, just like Kellen. If you don't have that running, it's not coincidence, right, that Kellen's best game of his career probably was against Florida when Isaiah ran for 175. It, it's not coincidental that he looked so much better up until Saturday this whole season because of the running game and the O-line. Nick's is the same way, but probably even magnified. So I could see where the A&M defense shuts down the Auburn offense. They've got a banged up, both their tackles are hurt. My question though, Hunter, is if they do that and the offense goes back to the form, Kellen and the offense in general, that they played it for about five games in a row there, I think that's the formula for an impressive A&M win. So my question to you is, what do you need to see them do differently? Because I think Auburn's going to do a lot of the same stuff with that handsy, grabby, man-to-man coverage where they're just basically daring the officials to call PI and just assuming they won't. And you saw those guys, not only the quarterback, but the Aggie receivers get frustrated Saturday night. So what do they need to do this weekend in order to?
Well, when you have defenders that are putting their hands on you, you have to find a way to run physical routes. And mm-hmm. every team that's done that to us, we've struggled against. Bama did it to us. We were pretty much insignificant at the receiver position. And you're right. When you watch it on film, our receivers just don't like the physicality of play. If you let them run loose, if you let them run shallow crosses against soft zones, they do pretty good. But none of them, other than Anais, who actually uses a lot of his quickness to create separation, we just got to create separation. And you're right. If I'm Auburn watching LSU's defense, I'm going to take some of what they did and replicate it. I think number two, we've got to be much more sound at the quarterback position. We've got to not predetermine where we're going with the ball. We've got to read, take our reads and throw the ball to the open receiver. And we've got to throw the ball with accuracy. And then I think defensively, the thing that concerns me, which will be much different this Saturday versus last Saturday, is Bo Nix is a quarterback that can extend plays with his legs. And you didn't have that threat at LSU. The kid that everybody is, I guess, so high on, this TJ Finley, I mean, he looks slower than Tom Brady does at 48 yeah. years old. So, between him and Max Johnson, those guys had no real run threat. And I think we tend to match up well. The thing with Bo Nix is, his I think he's got an average arm, but he reminds me of a lot of the kid at Texas, Ellinger. He's a great competitor. He's got a physical nature to him. He'll run you over on third and short to get a first. And he can run, and he sometimes arguably is maybe better throwing the ball on the run and out of the pocket than he is, in the pocket. So he can extend plays with his legs. We'll have to have great discipline at our safety spots, not get caught up in double moves, not get caught up in deep balls, and play with discipline. I think it's a game we can win, but I do not think it's going to be an easy walk in the park game either, because Bo plays better statistically, much better at home than he does on the road. I've lost you, Looch.
I was saying they're a completely different team at home. You're right. And let me ask you this. If they are able to get by, okay, if they are able to get by, where does your personal – because, I feel like I've been catching grief this year because I've been predicting close game after close game. I've been a little bit of a nervous Nelly with this thing. And Griffin, stop it now. Sit down. See the discipline we have in the Lucci house?
Let's see if he listens.
Look at this. Just look. If I'm watching these games, I kept thinking they were going to be close. We finally got something that was competitive. But let me tell you, Hunter, that what the national media is not looking at. Yeah, the offense struggled Saturday. At the end of three quarters, and I've been doing this a long time, and so have you. At the end of three quarters in A&M's last four games, they have been up like 100. It's like 120-24 at the end of three quarters. 42-17 Arkansas, 20-0 LSU, 28-7 Mississippi State, and 34-0 South Carolina. I mean, I went back and looked. They didn't even do that with Johnny for four straight conference games. I'm not saying I'm expecting that this weekend, But this team has quietly been playing as well as anybody in the country outside of Clemson with Trevor Lawrence and Alabama. I don't think you can put Ohio State in there yet. They haven't even played. I think they've played half of a good team once. But my question to you is, because I'm here, I think everybody else has gotten up here. I'm here. They started here. Now they're up here. You live down here. You're the coach, Hunter. You're the that ain't going to get it done next week. Where? How are you going to feel about this team's chances of getting to 9-1 and just forget about the playoff talk, positioning themselves to have a shot at it if they go into Jordan-Hare Stadium this weekend and beat Auburn for the first time in four tries?
Well, I mean, the football player in me has had it beaten out of me to look too far ahead, right? You always have to worry about the game in front of you. As my dad used to remind me, if you want to play on Sunday, you better play your butt off on Saturday and quit worrying about Sunday. So I think how I would answer that is we left a lot of opportunity on the field against an LSU football team. And I saw tremendous areas for opportunity. We must get some better production from our receivers. We pretty much played the same two guys now for several weeks. We don't have hardly any rotation there. Kind of a question for you. What is the last 100-yard receiver we've had at A&M?
Well,
this year?
I'm positive that it hadn't happened since on his last catch, the guy that did it tore his ACL.
Bingo, Chapman against Florida. So we really, I mean, in this day and age of football, 100-yard receivers are on every team, on every roster. Yeah. So we've got to get some more production at receiver. I did not think, while the offensive line gave up a sack, and in full disclosure, I didn't watch the second half. I only got through the first. But I thought they played pretty good. I thought they gave good protection to Mond in the pocket. He was not under duress most of the time. He had plenty of time to get rid of the ball. So, you know, I thought we played good there. The weaknesses on offense, we have to get better at the receiver position. And interestingly enough, I think the thing that scares me defensively is we've got to get better in the back end and continue to improve. The safety play has to play with discipline. Mm-hmm. We don't have the speed to recover if we make big mistakes. And I think our corners have to continue to they're getting better. They're playing better football, but they just have to have a continuation. And as you know, there's some injuries in the back end. Mm-hmm. But I think our receivers need to play better. Our quarterback needs to play better. And our back end on defense needs to improve. And if we'll work at those things, I think we can win at Jordan-Hare. I think we can win out. And that'll be far, far greater than any of us would have ever imagined or even talked about back in the Vandy game or the week after. We were pretty depressed and miserable after that poor performance at home against Vandy. So things have turned in a very positive light. And I think we're continuing to get better, and we just need to, you know, we need to have more and more of it. Got to keep getting better week in and week out. Can't look beyond this Saturday.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Hunter, and you're talking about the receivers, and I don't know where it comes from, but I'll say this. Three guys to me that are particularly explosive in this offense, and I don't want to leave out, like, there's certain things, like, we kind of know, and even though Weidemeyer was quiet this past week, you know, he's proven week in and week out he's there. Obviously, Isaiah has been one of the most consistent offensive players in this conference. And the O-line, you're talking about it, and I thought you hit on a great point. You didn't even realize it. They did give up a sack. Kellen did get his jersey was covered. I mean, he took some shots. And McCollum sat there this week and said, that's unacceptable to us. What? Like, I was so happy to hear him say that this past week. And it just shows me when I listen to him and Carson Green and Dan Moore talk to the media – how far that group has come. That, Hunter, we're talking about, this was probably LSU probably gave them their toughest night of the I call it the season, once they figured out that they were a pretty good team. You know, from four on, LSU gave them their toughest night. And I don't know if they lost that battle, if it was a push, but they certainly didn't dominate in the trenches. Here's the difference. these dudes aren't happy about it. Kellen only got sacked once. Like you said, he had good protection almost the whole night.
Got well, sacked Billy, once. I think perspective is, if memory serves me correctly, LSU came into that game with 15 sacks, and I think we racked up three more. So, I mean, they're almost to 20 sacks through seven games, and, yeah, you know, we're
well,
sitting
and they
at
sacked
three.
A&M. Kellen got sacks. I looked it up 6 times last year when they played LSU, and
right,
they ran for like 30 yards. This year, and a bad day for A&M last year for that O-line is like a half dozen sacks, or like when they went to Georgia and finished with 0 rushing yards. So this right. was an off day for them. They had a 140-yard running back. As a team, they ran for over 160, and they gave up 1 sack. So I love where that has gone with them. But what I need to see, Hunter, I think, against a team like Auburn, because they got explosive weapons and Schwartz and Stove, and I think Bigsby and Spiller can push if Bigsby's healthy, although I think Bigsby's running against a better D-line than Spiller will be. But Anaya Smith, Devon Achane, and, man, I wouldn't mind seeing them mix in a little more of Kellen running. To me, those are three, like, explosive plays waiting to happen when those two guys are touching it, and when number 11 can kind of get it going running a little bit. Because I think they're going to need some big hitters this week to kind of get things going offensively.
You know, Billy, the one thing that we've done little doses of, we did more of it early in the year, and it's like now that Chapman's gone down and we're thin at receiver, experienced receiver, you know, we've now moved Anais back to where he's playing a lot more true receiver, the true receiver positions, and you're losing a running back, and Achane is a guy that, you know, I'd love to see him get more than just 1 or 2 snaps. I think it's hurt us, the fact that Anais, while he's a phenomenal receiver, you're losing that dynamic that he brings to our backfield. So I don't know if there's a way if they can get Achane ready to take some more reps, because I think we've seen athletically he's quite gifted. But I'd love to see us get back to an occasional 21 personnel. I'd love some 2-back. I think it gives you a much challenging dynamic. And I'd hope to see some personnel packages. It was almost vanilla, if you will, from just a personnel standpoint. We were pretty much 3 wides all night. Now, we did a few things. We'd get an empty. But from a personnel standpoint, we really never changed. We had Hez, we had number 2, we had Anais, we had Weidemeyer, and we had Spiller. And that's pretty much the package that you had all night. And when a defense doesn't have to adjust for different personnel, I think it makes it a little bit easier on them, and you're not putting as much pressure. So I'd love to see us change some things up with our personnel packages when we go on the road to Auburn.
We'll be right back to the podcast in a moment, but first, here's a message from our good friends at HEB.
At HEB.com, your personal HEB shopper will score all the delicious game day goodies you need, from chips and dip to prime one sliders, without sidelining your schedule. HEB, no store does more to save you time.
I was wondering, we didn't see as much of that. That would be – look, I thought Jimbo called one of his best games at A&M, actually was like 2 years ago at Auburn. Travion had 100-plus rushing. He had 100 receiving. This is against Auburn. You know, they were killing him with screens. In that game, too, like you said, they weren't getting a lot open down the field with receivers, and they adjusted and attacked an obvious weakness there and exploited it. So, and it was by getting creative and kind of doing something that they didn't do nearly as much of. So, yeah, if it's 2-backs, if it's screens, if it's more of, you know, the QB run game, whatever it is, I think as we get later in the season now, this would be a good week to kind of just drop some of that on some people. But I think, Hunter, this gets down to – I talked about your teams. This is going to be like, go out there and win both lines of scrimmage, period. You do that, you're going to win.
The bright spot for me is when you look at the game, that the only other game where we had less production in the run game was the Bama game, where we were, I think, 3.8 yards per carry. And in this game, we were 4.4 yards per carry. But what I loved about it is we didn't abandon the run. And what I mean is, I think a lot of people expect when you hand the ball off that you're always going to have these big explosive runs. And we, you know, the touchdown run that Spiller had was a big, big explosive play. So when you look at how he got his 162 yards, a bulk of those came on that one single play. So my point is there were a lot of 2 yard gains, a lot of 3 yard gains, a lot of just grinding it out, but by sticking with it, you kept a really good ratio of, you know, 47% pass and 52% run, and you ate the time of possession up. I thought, you know, I guess the fact that we stayed committed to the run, mm-hmm. even though the yards weren't coming easy. I see that happen way too often where one of my good friends that coaches in the NFL, I won't say his name or team, but they're struggling immensely. I think they're now on a 5-game slide, and, you know, it's almost like the coordinator expects every handoff to result in a 5-yard carry. If not, they're putting in the air 70 times a game, 65 to 70% of the time during the game, not plays, but percentage. And it makes it really hard on offensive linemen and even the backs to protect when the defense knows on every play, you're going to just pin your ears back and come. So I like the fact that we stayed committed to the run. I like the fact that we kept our ratio healthy where we were a little bit heavier run versus pass. And in every game this year that we've won, we've maintained that discipline. And I didn't think our running was horrible by any stretch. I thought 162 net yards is a hell of a night mm-hmm. against a really good defensive line. I don't think Auburn's defensive line will be as good as LSU's. I could be wrong. And my understanding is that kid starts, was it Swinley? What's the great secondary player for LSU?
Oh, the Stanley. Corner.
Stanley, right?
I don't know why I'm not thinking it's of
him, Stingley, right? Stingley,
Derek Stingley.
Yeah, I mean, he's an amazing, you know, corner that really bottled us up all night. Yeah. And we struggled to create any separation. You could tell he's 6'1", 195 pounds, crazy rangy, very athletic.
Probably be a top five pick next year.
Yeah, he's a smart football player, and he looked like that. So
you remember his dad, Stingley, was paralyzed back in the league back in the day. Remember his dad was.
I do remember that. Wow. But long story short, we've got to just, you know, this is a great opportunity. We're playing good. And Billy, I kind of like it. I mean, I know that a lot of people were glued on Sunday, you know, oh my gosh, you know, where are we going to come out ranking wise and how's the national media going to treat us? Listen, I would pay them to continue to just ignore us. Don't say good things about us, because I like us much better as the chip on our shoulder, pissed off all the time team than I do the front running team. I just think we play better when you know, there's great motivation when people ignore you, neglect you, and don't give you the respect you think you deserve. It's a lot harder to do that when everyone's telling you how wonderful you are. And we've proven here in the last decade or so at A&M, we struggle when we're being told how wonderful we are. So I'm fine with the national media. Just go out there to handle your business this week, handle your business against Ole Miss, handle your business against Tennessee, wake up, be 9-1 with one loss to Bama, and things get really interesting. And it's all in front of you and it's all there for you to take. One thing too, without saying his name, I had a upper league office person in my sitting with me at the game. And, you know, here's the other thing. The better you are as a team, the better you suddenly become as a player. So if there's a message to these players, when you get, you know, when you win these games and you put yourself in a position to play in an upper tier bowl game, that'll be the game where every scout, every GM, every player personnel guy is honed in looking to see your skills and what type of player you are. And all of a sudden you become, I'll tell you this. I'm sure Anais is a kid that everybody knows, but my guy left there completely noticed Anais. I mean, he saw his effort. He was surprised by his quickness. He was surprised the fact that he could return punts. So he helped himself in a
major way. He probably goes back and watch it. Like, that was a kind of a quiet night for Anais, and he probably goes back, says, I'm going to go watch it, and he's going to get more and more impressed because of what he saw against LSU on a
He jots his name down two or three times, Billy, throughout the first quarter, just on some things that he did and big catches. Remember the third down that for a while everybody thought we got the first, and I think they ended up ruling against us and we had to punt, but made a great effort to come back and catch kind of a poorly thrown ball to the outside. He did just so many things like that that you're absolutely right. He'll go back to his player personnel folks and say, hey, I want you to pull tape of him against Florida, Alabama. And now all of a sudden, you know, people become aware of your skill set. So it's a great opportunity. And there's so much for these guys to play for. And this is in such a distracting year, just a tremendous opportunity. And just keep saying bad things about us.
Yeah. And I think, look, A&M in all sports, we had a basketball game the other night with Billy Gillespie and Buzz Williams. Okay. That was as blue collar as it got. And Tarleton State came in here and gave A&M all they could handle because they were blue collar. And Billy was a wildly successful coach here and popular, and Buzz is going to be wildly successful and popular here. R.C. Slocum, Jackie Sherrill, you go all the way through. Blue collar, and that's what Jimbo's all about, and the style of play. And blue collar is what gets it done here. Blue collar and defense. And I think if A&M is going to get there, they're going to get there with a running game, play action passing, a tough quarterback, and he's tough. He took a beating again the other night and kicking people's asses at the line of scrimmage, Hunter. And if they do that these next 3 weeks, they'll win. What's going to be – I want to ask you this because it's, to me, this is the last thing I want to say about this, and we'll cut it loose this week. While we're sitting here, I'm getting Dalton's text telling us to stop, and I look down, and Keontae Ingram, the running back at Texas, is entering the transfer portal. He's opting out. Texas has had a couple other guys opt out to skip their last couple games to turn pro. They're trying to get themselves worked up in a lather over Urban Meyer. If they don't get him, there's no telling where that train's going to go. But you look at Texas. You look at your boy, Mr. Tight End, Harbaugh at Michigan. You look at Penn State and social media, James Franklin. And you look at LSU, the defending national champs. That team that just came in here, A&M's B game, C game, and they were up 20-0 through three quarters. LSU's going to go 3-7, 3-7. So you look at all these programs, right? And I think people, you mentioned it in this weird year, right? The job Jimbo and his staff and these guys have done to elevate when other teams have fallen, you know, and a lot of teams are going to use 2020 as an excuse, and they're going to tell recruits and the media, well, it's just, you know, it was tough to ever. Just to me, Hunter, the way they've handled things and gone about things, hey, 2 weeks off. We didn't practice for 2 weeks, didn't play for three, and we come out and, you know, it wasn't pretty, and we got a dang win against an SEC West team and the defending champs. My point is, I think people should really – I'm worried about Saturday's game just like I was last Saturday. I know you are too, because we know how close this thing is. But I do think everybody needs to sit back and really appreciate and enjoy this football team this season, including Saturday. And if they can get a win, man, this gets exponentially more exciting.
Well, Lucci, I think that – I mean, I can't – I'm not probably within my rights to speak on behalf of others. So I'll caveat the comment to myself and hope and assume that many feel the same way. As I think, you know, there was a lot of skepticism after the first game, even more after the poor performance against Bama, but then the Florida game kind of got you excited. And really since that period, it's been, as you stated, pretty workmanlike. It's just been blue collar, nothing crazy, nothing flashy, different guys stepping up when needed. And here we are 6-1 with, you know, three games left. It's pretty exciting where we are. And I think for me, this is a game that I see as a big hurdle. And I'm not saying I'm not underestimating Ole Miss. I'm not underestimating Tennessee. They're both good opponents, but just for me, this is a game where if we can find a way to win at Auburn, I breathe a little easier and I see a much clearer path to the promised land, if you will. So it's a huge game. It's one where Auburn's been a spoiler for A&M a bunch in the past. And, you know, some years we've gone to Auburn and played really well. Some years we've gone to Auburn and not played well. And when you go back and you watch, I for whatever reason, distinctly remember watching this game last year here at home. And we really called a lot of really good plays. It's just we missed an execution. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a mutter type game, right? I mean, it wasn't this high scoring. I think they had that. Schwartz had like a 58-yard reverse where we had a guy, you know, had he done what he was taught to do, the play call should have resulted in an 8-yard loss. And instead we didn't execute. We didn't have discipline. We got our head in the wrong gap. But, you know, this is just one of those games where it's going to be an ugly dogfight. I don't think it's going to be this big, exciting, high-scoring game. I think it's going to be a lot of good defense and a lot of really tough third downs. And it's one that we are now have kind of in our DNA, as you alluded to. We are this gritty, grinder, you know, blue-collar team. And to me, that's who Auburn wants to be. And kind of is as well. So it'll be really interesting to see who can win this slugfest. And if we can come out the other side, my hope gets much higher going into these last two games.